Blog Talk Radio.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my
this one's for you, Jace.
On wedding ring in the movies. And I'm not proud of my address. In a torn up town, no postcode envy.
But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose, dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands.
The 1-2 again.
How is everybody doing today? I am Chris McSwiggin, and there is a gigantic echo. Hold on a second. Boom, I think I just fixed it. Okay, so, we have a huge show today, an all New York show today, and that is myself and Mr. Jason Cordonnier, our Mets beat writer, who's up on the line today, and I had to torture him. I tortured Bill from Long Island before with the whole, you know, meet the Mets thing and all that and whatever. So I just figured, hey, I got to give the boy a little bit of credit. I didn't want to play the entire Royal song, you know, because it's like 4 minutes long and whatever. But, Jason, how you feeling today, buddy, after last night?
I'm a little bumped out, you know. I mean, this mania is over, and so is Murphy Palooza. So I'm a little bummed out. Hopefully my team learns from this, because, I mean, the Royals, the world champion Royals, were in a similar situation last year where they came up short, and I'm 1,000% sure that fueled them to where they're at today.
Well, for the second straight year, the road team is celebrating. And, you know, when it's a team that you root for, okay, like you're a passionate Mets fan, you're our, you know, Mets beat writer on our site and everything. When it's a team that you root for that's in it, and you get to see that other team in the gray jerseys celebrating on your home field, it stings a little more, doesn't it?
Oh, it stings a lot more. And what makes it worse is that, you know what it reminds me of? Like you said earlier, it reminds me of the 99 Spurs. And we saw the beginning of a dynasty when they won their first championship at Madison.
Well, you know what it kind of reminds me of? The San Francisco Giants. They win their first in 58 years, I believe, and then they win 3 of 5, including that one. I do apologize for the quality if it sounds a little weird. I'm not using my microphone today because I'm not home. I am down here at work at La Studio, so I'm calling in on my phone, just like Jason's calling in on his phone. So if it sounds like a bunch of phone quality, I do apologize for that. But so I have a couple of questions for you here as we go into this show, because there is some substance to this show. It's, you know, Dustin's not here, so it's not, you know, a half hour of bashing before we get into topics. What does this mean for the Mets? And when I say that, I mean, do they re-sign Murphy? There were some rumors before the World Series happened during this whole hot, you know, playoff streak that Murphy had. He's a free agent next year, and the Mets may not want to ship out the dough for him. And now that it's over, they're saying that Cespedes also may not be brought back. I mean, any validity to these rumors? I mean, you live in New York City. You probably get the first access to this stuff.
Well, there is definitely some truth to the rumors. Well, right, as of right now, they plan to offer Murphy a qualified offer of $15 million for 1 year.
Okay.
Which, more likely, he's going to turn that down and test the free agent market. Cespedes, the asking price, he's asking for a 7-year, $159 million contract. And, you know, the last thing we all remember of him was the foul ball that went into the outfield off his knee. So, I don't know. It's a steep price, but the Wilpons have to look at some stuff that's in their favor. The National League East is rebuilding. The Phillies are rebuilding. The Marlins, we don't know, even though Don Mattingly is over there now. He's going to be running the ship. The Nationals are going to lose a lot of their talent in via free agency in the next couple of years. So the Mets are primed to be a contender for the division. So you might not want to – you want to bring back all your – bring back most of your weapons. I would try my best to bring back Cespedes. I really wouldn't – I wouldn't mind losing Murphy because, if anything, this World Series showed the defensive efficiencies of the entire infield. And to be a world championship, you know, standard team, your infield defense has got to be solid.
Would you agree that for the second year in a row, the World Series was, I mean, I know we had some high-scoring games here, but the World Series was won with pitching?
Pitching and time, and manufacturing runs. Like, I mean, even though without
the story there. You saw Lincecum and Kane did work last year.
They did. But the only problem is it was the continuous manufacturing of runs that the Royals were able to do. But also, to me, what was the main factor that a lot of media is trying to overlook was the fact that our catcher couldn't throw anybody out. So they knew in the back of their minds we could run on this guy, and if we catch any of the Mets infielders slipping like they did with last night, they could score. So they were extremely aggressive on the base pads. To me, that kind of like leaned into their favor of winning the whole thing.
You know, I was saving this prediction for those of you out there who may be listening. You may believe me, you may not. Doesn't matter to me either way. Oh, excuse me. But we talked about this, you know, Back to the Future prediction with the Chicago Cubs winning their, you know, in the movie and the whole thing, blah, 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 blah. I actually, back in the days of N64, I used to play with the Royals. And I'll tell you why. I had the Ken Griffey Jr. baseball game and the whole thing. And I did that, and the reason I did that was because they've been bad my entire lifetime. They've been terrible. They've been... The last one in 85, since then, boom, nothing, basement team. The Mets had some, at that time, were in the Subway Series, they were going through the whole thing with Piazza and whatever. But I actually played the King Griffey Jr. baseball game, used the Royals, built up a team for the minor league, whatever, and I kid you not, and you can come to my house in upstate New York, I will find my N64, I will put my cartridge back in, and I will show you I won the World Series in that game with the Royals in the year 2015. I just remembered that the other day, and I'm going to go find my cartridge in my box, and I'm going to go confirm it, but I remembered that, and I thought that was really strange.
In the whole Back to the Future thing? What gets lost in the whole Back to the Future prediction is when that movie was made, the Royals actually won the World Series championship, so that's a little, you know, karma right there. Teams like the Royals and the Giants, what I've noticed in baseball the last couple of years is they're no longer being farm systems of the Mets, sorry, not the Mets, of the Yankees or the Red Sox. Like, they've always had great players come out of their farm system, but they were just never able to keep them. And now with the social media world and the MLB network and the money coming in, teams could actually sustain their young talent. So teams like the Orioles, teams like the Royals, teams like the Giants and Nats, even the Mets. The Mets, you know, most of the talent that's down the pipe is from the farm system. So, you know, I think the Royals are definitely beginning. They're definitely in the peak of what's going to be their dominance in the American League.
Well, what this is too is when you're bad for that long, you are able to get a lot of number one picks and a lot of the top guys coming out of college or high school or wherever they're coming from. So they've been able to accumulate guys like Moustakas and guys like that for years now, and now it's finally coming to fruition. So let me ask you then, you talked about a little bit about Murphy maybe leaving. You have to bring Cespedes back, but both are free agents at the end of this. Did Murphy, a lot of people are saying, one of them being the New York Post, but a lot of people through social media and Facebook and things are saying, Murphy, who was so hot during the playoffs, the NLDS and NLCS, may have cost them this series with that error that he had. And just poor play overall, really didn't show up too much. And also, before you answer that, but also that dreaded wait that the Mets had when they swept the Cubs, they had 5 extra days sort of to cool off. The Royals only had 2. The Royals stayed hot. Do you feel that there is a bit of a negative aspect to sweeping and waiting that long? I mean, I know you want to sweep. If you're going to win a series, sweeping is like the ultimate prize. But if you have to wait that long and you fizzle out, just 2 times now we've seen it. In fact, the only team that had this kind of a layoff and still won the World Series was the Phillies back in, I believe.
I don't think the layoff really mattered that much. I think it was just a bad matchup for the Mets. And it was just a bad matchup. And, you know, you also got to think that he's now going against American League pitching and it's a bigger stage. So there's too much to weigh in. I do think the Mets are going to lose him only for the fact that they need a better second baseman. I mean, his defense has been suspect his entire career as a Met. So you definitely want to upgrade there. We gotta figure out the shortstop situation. Tejada might not be available till July.
Okay. We also have another New Yorker on the line. Again, a fully New York show today. Myself being upstate and you being in the city. We have another city caller, not necessarily a Mets fan per se, but a New York dedicated baseball fan. Arlenas is on the line. You are our Mets beat writer. Arlenas is our Yankees beat reporter here for the Overtime Sports News Network. Arlenas, how are you feeling today on this 2nd of November?
Hi, guys. I feel Hello. Really good. So I had a really good game last night.
Yeah. Well, were you rooting for the Mets or rooting for the Royals?
No, sorry. I was rooting for the Royals. All the way.
You have to apologize to me. You might have to apologize to Jason, not to me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Jason. I enjoy it.
Now, you do have the same sort of hatred to the Mets, Lena says, Bill Moreland does.
What was that?
You don't have the same sort of hatred towards the Mets as somebody like Bill from Long Island would have, right?
No, I don't hate anybody from the Mets. Is that what you asked for?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, okay, you're not, like, Bill from Long Island, who is a Yankee fan, and might be just as big of a Yankee fan as you, which is a bold statement to make, he said he hates the Mets, absolutely hates the Mets, and he said he was going to call in today and give us his reason as to why, now that they've lost. We're expecting Bill from Long Island here within the next 2 hours, but he said back when the Mets played the Red Sox and the whole Bill Buckner thing happened and all that, that he actually rooted for the Red Sox, which is damn near blasphemous for a Yankee fan. So I'm just wondering if you sort of feel the same way towards the Mets Bill from Long Island may have.
Well, not really. I was rooting for the Royals, actually, because I'm Dominican, and there was like a big – the 3 stars from the Royals were Dominican, and
okay.
a lot of Latinos, and they were playing hard. Well, things it was a really good game. But, you know, as a Yankees fan, and for the Yankees, not so much for the Mets. And, well, they played well, but they lost.
They did. That they did. Well, Let me ask you that. I got Jason's opinion on this, Arlenas, and let me ask you, and I am trying to get this mic to work because I'm the host of the show, so I should probably be on the mic, but I don't know if you caught any of it, but I'm not home at the moment. I'm at work, so I'm doing the show calling in as well, so I do apologize for any listeners about the quality, but let me ask you this then before we move on to the next topic. The Mets, there's rumors they might not re-sign Murphy, and they also might not re-sign Cespedes. Jason feels they need to bring at least one of them back. Also, which one would you take? If you could only choose one, Arlenas, Murphy or Cespedes, which one of those two do you bring back? And also, do you feel that maybe the Murphy error cost in this series? Those two questions.
I'm going to take a bit of a different side in the question. I'm going to say, as what I saw, I didn't like what the Mets did to Joanny Cespedes. They put him in the central field. He said a couple times he's not comfortable there. And they have a Gold Glove winner, Lagares, sitting in the bench, Golden Greens center field. They have a rookie there, and Cespedes there in the center field, knowing that he's a left field, he feels comfortable. So I didn't like that approach that they did there. So, and Cespedes is actually a free agent. I would not, if I wasn't signed with the Mets back. And Daniel Murphy, he plays a couple positions. I don't know how well he plays, and he made a mistake. Now, when he was like hitting home, I was like crazy. He was the god, and then he made a mistake. Mm-hmm. He's the god. So I think like we should not just
well,
look at the
team. That's how it works in sports, though. I mean, that's how it works. I mean, if A-Rod went on a streak like this, and then A-Rod missed a ball at third base or struck out to end the series or something, people would be giving him crap too. I mean, you live in the mecca of negative journalism down there in New York. I mean, a lot of people are saying, if Murphy doesn't make that error, the Mets don't lose that game, and they're still playing them all night.
I wouldn't say that exactly. They were like, that was not just the one mistake. That was the Lucas Duda mistake. That was, they weren't like two runs for the Royals. Two runs is nothing. So they could hit some more and score some more runs. So I wouldn't point that just that. And the manager, he was putting people in different positions that were not their positions. So that's a problem too. I see. That's what I see.
Okay. I feel you there. Jason, are you agreeing with sort of what Alvinus has to say here? Did we lose Jason? We know Jason's got that wonderful Sprint network.
Yeah,
so
you guys hear me? Yeah.
Oh, you're here? Oh, there he is.
All right. What was the last question again? Oh, sorry.
Alvinus was talking about she feels it's more of a Duda thing than it was a Murphy thing. And that it was, the two runs that were cost from that, two runs that the Murphy thing gave up, two runs to the Royals is nothing. To the Mets, really, has proven been nothing. So you don't feel that it was the Murphy error, that if he doesn't make that error on that play, and, you know, that maybe the Mets are still playing tomorrow night?
You know what? I'm not gonna put blame on any. I think this is, well, it's enough blame for everybody. I mean, I think Colin should have pulled Harvey out after the walk. I think David Wright should have let Flores field the ball. And then even after that didn't happen, he still should have tried to run down the score on third base instead of throwing it to first. Because the minute he looked away, he already went off running. So, I mean, there's enough blame for everybody to go around. The Royals were just the more scrappier team. They were the more aggressive team. I don't know if you guys noticed, but every game that the Mets blown, I mean, well, they've blown 4-5, but after each blown lead, they were demoralized. The body language was terrible. They were swinging at bad pitches. The relief pitchers were just nervous, like, I don't want to be the guy to make a mistake. You know, it's enough blame to go around for everybody, in my opinion.
Totally agree. It was mentally. At some point, I think it was mentally. They made a railroad that went afraid again. And then, I don't know, miscommunication sometimes. Somebody called the ball and don't get it. I think that was all add up together. And Lagares, I was really mad that Lagares did not start any of the games. I was really mad about that.
But I'll say this much about the Mets real quick. This World Series showed all their flaws that we was all worried, all of us Mets fans were worried about all year long. The infield was terrible. Our catcher can't throw nobody out. We were all being a little wary about Terry Collins. I mean, he's pretty much, Terry Collins is the equivalent of the Giants head coach, Tom Coughlin. He got bailed out. This was going to be his last year, but he got bailed out because the team did so exceed expectation. So he got a contract extension. Had that not happened, he would have been out of here. So his memory skills is always questionable. So a lot of things went their way in the playoffs, but the World Series definitely showed all their flaws, including managerial flaws.
You know, I think when it comes down to managerial issues, Ned Yost and, you know, and oh, hold on a second. I think we have another caller coming on here. Here we go. Boom. Bada bing. I think it comes down to Ned Yost being obviously a very good manager, but the Mets, they have some good leadership in that dugout as well. And I don't think it came down to a mismanagement error, although Arenas does make a good point with, you know, putting Cespedes in center field when he wasn't necessarily comfortable and things like that. But I feel like the Mets did everything that they could, and unfortunately for Jason and unfortunately for everybody in Queens and Long Island and whoever, the Royals were the superior team. The Royals were the better team, guys. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. Do both of you feel that right now the Royals, as of this moment, the season's been over for less than 24 hours, do you feel that the Royals right now are the – well, actually, it's a little bit more than 24. But anyway, do you feel that the Royals are right now the favorite for next season to repeat?
I wouldn't know. They have a great team, but there's a lot of great teams also that this year they didn't make it. But I think I'm really excited for everything that's going to happen. So many people's changing teams, new managers. There's a bunch of people that are free agents. They're exciting. I'm really excited for what's coming next year. So I wouldn't say nobody's a favorite yet. So let's see what. I'll tell you what. Let's wait till spring training and then we'll see who's going to be a favorite.
I would say they're absolutely not going to be favored to repeat. I think the American League is definitely going to get tougher. You know, the Yankees and Red Sox are both going to reload. They're going to spend crazy money this offseason. Then you still got Toronto for the world. You still got the Angels. Oakland's going to be better. So, and in terms of National League, I mean, the Mets just took out three teams that are going to be hot. They just took out three teams that are going to be angry to get back to work, not including the Pirates and the Cardinals. So are we going to see a rematch of the World Series next year? I highly doubt it. Do I think the Royals are going to get back?
Do I sound a little better now?
You sound a lot better, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was able to get to my microphone, so that's good because I don't like holding a phone in my ears for that long. So anyways, okay, so do you feel that perhaps in the American League, because you look at the American League right now, you look at the three teams, really, that you think, okay, they got a shot at the World Series. Obviously, St. Louis is in there every year. The Cubs are making a push. They had the second or third best record in baseball. The Pirates are really good. You know, the Mets, obviously, are going to be representing again. The Dodgers are good. There's endless names that you can talk about in the National League. The American League, you really don't have a whole lot of teams where you can come out and say, you know, there's three, four, five, six contenders. I mean, you've got the Royals. I mean, you might have, you know, a team in that division challenge them, but I doubt it. You've got, obviously, you know, the Yankees are right now looking like still the best team in that division, but you never really know with that Yankee team. You've got teams out west, maybe, you know, the Angels or the Rangers, but again, those two teams I'm not afraid of. So you really got to say right now the Royals are probably the best team in baseball. They're not getting, you know, they're not old by any means. I mean, the average age of the Royals team is like 24 years old. So this is a young, poised, hungry team. And I think that right now we could be looking at, you know, a worst-to-first situation that turns into maybe an early 90s to late 90s Yankee team that was so good. I mean, this team has the capability to win 100-plus games. Like you said, they're scrappy. They play great great ball on the base path. They're really good at that small ball thing. And this team just keeps coming. They never go away, this Royals team. So, to me, yeah, I definitely feel like they might be the number one contender right now. For the National League, obviously, I'm taking Mets and Cubs again. I'm thinking it's going to be a repeat of that as of right now. I think that those are probably the two best teams. The Cardinals were good for a while. I think that they're getting older. They've had injury issues. They've had different things. We've had the Pirates. I don't think they got enough talent. McCutcheon, amazing. I just don't think they got the ability to get over that hump quite yet. But again, they're going to be in the mix. So there's some teams out there. The Giants, I think, are going to come back. The Dodgers are going to be out there. But right now, it's going to be Mets, Cubs, and Royals are really the only three teams you've got to be watching for when it comes down to this time again next year.
Totally
and
agree.
On
totally
the line,
agree.
On the line as promised, Jason. Now we don't have Dustin today, so we're not going to have a lot of bashing. But if there is any bashing to be done, and if there is any stories or secrets to be revealed here, because remember, sharing is caring, and friends don't keep secrets. We have Bill from Long Island on the line, and Bill from Long Island on the line here is going to finally, hopefully tell us why he hates the Mets so much. Now that the Mets are done, now that all the mojo is gone, Jason's taken off his orange and blue, and he's moved on to the whatever color the Giants are, gray and white and blue, whatever the Giants wear. And
first
Bill
place
is
Giants,
finally,
first
hopefully, going to tell us.
Wow, what an introduction. Boy, what a great series it was, first and foremost. I could go on some diatribe about the Mets right now, and everyone is saying it's been a great season. It really wasn't a great season. They were very fortunate at the end. They played great for 2 months. You know, this wasn't the 86 Mets when you knew there was magic from beginning to end. It wasn't the 96 or 98 Yankees when you knew from day one that, they had something special there. It was a treat. You got very close. You lost two games in the ninth. You had the lead. You lost the third when you had a lead in the eighth. You just didn't have enough. And the better team won, let's be honest. The better team won.
That's what I said. The Royals are clearly the better team.
Clearly the better team. You know, I was a little surprised with how well Volquez really pitched basically all year. He's always had good stuff, but as a baseball guy, you hear about all the time about players' stuff and whatnot and how it usually doesn't translate. In his ERA, he's always had much better stuff than he actually pitched to. And finally, for once, he put it all together, and he really did pitch two strong games in the series going head-to-head with the Dark Knight and all. But, my Met hatred really got the best of me here, and I'm just so happy and fulfilled that the Mets will be the bridesmaid and not the bride.
I understand that. Now, wait. Okay, now that Bill's here, Arlie, it is now, I agree with you. But before you were like, I don't hate the Mets. I just rooted for the Royals.
I don't hate them, but I was so satisfied that they did not win. Because the thing that I hate about
Jason,
them is like...
you're not making many friends here, buddy.
here I am cool. He knows that we are cool. But we are Giants friends. But, every time the Mets do something, and it's necessarily the Mets to defend. Like, where are the Yankees now? Where are the championships more than any other team, the franchise, And they knock out, and they win, they lose, and they never talk about the Mets. But every time the Mets do something, they have to come with the Yankees. I don't know why.
It's little brother syndrome. That's what it is. When you're the second fiddle in town, obviously it's a Met town now, though. I mean, that's all changed. If, the town is blue and orange, and I'll readily admit that. That changed. There are certain times in history where you can point to an event on a certain night when a town becomes a town. And for this year, it's been a Yankee town for the last, I would dare say, 24 years. The event that killed it, that really flipped the switch this year, on the same night the Mets went from 7-1 down in Washington to come back and win 9-7, where the Yankees they lost a game late. Davis hit a ninth-inning home run off of one of our relievers, and they won the game. That was the night where it really flipped down. It's a Met town now, and it might be for a few years now, but we'll be okay.
Well, let me ask you,
I'll give it a couple days.
Well, a couple days. Let them mourn. Let them, gorge themselves on the Halloween candy and get over it. Look at next year. But, Bill, let me ask you then, because I got takes from both Jason and Arlenas, and let me ask you this question. Before we get to this long-awaited story as to why it is you hate the Mets with the passion that you hate them with, let me ask you real quick, the rumors are out there that the Mets are not going to re-sign Daniel Murphy. Mets are possibly not going to sign Yoenis Cespedes. Jason feels that they should both come back, but if he had to choose one, he's kind of torn between which one you take. He feels Murphy is going to explore the free agent market. Cespedes may do the same thing. Both guys are big bats in that lineup. Both are pretty good fielders. Do you feel that the Mets let either one or both of them go and essentially start to have a little bit of that unwinding fire sale that we've seen with World Series teams in recent years?
Well, let's put it this way: as Met ownership, anything that, besides winning the whole thing, the Mets, for Mets ownership wise, things couldn't have gone any better. They got the maximum amount of playoff games at home to create, you know, the buzz, and they rumored that the Mets made $60 or $65 million with this unexpected playoff run. Murphy and. They got a lot out of Murphy and Cespedes throughout the regular season, and they had their heroics in the postseason. But we saw the chinks in the armor later on in the series. So not only did they collect the most money they could, they have an automatic out to let them go. And they can always lean on their pitching. They have their big four starters, and they have Wheeler coming back for a solid five. I think they're letting both Murphy and Cespedes go, and they might not have to replace them, technically.
And we get back our closer. We get back our traditional closer next season as well.
You don't want
well,
him back.
Do you think then, Jason? Well, Jason,
oh, no,
do you feel that Familia
to get assets?
Well, do you feel Familia earned a spot somewhere in this bullpen? You know, because obviously, I mean, yeah, I know he gave up. You know, a couple hits, a run, whatever it might be. Like, everyone's saying, oh, well, Familia finally collapsed. But he was lights out this entire playoffs. Do you feel that Familia earned a spot somewhere in this dugout, at least? Or you know, maybe come in as the eighth inning as a setup guy before the closer? Or what? I mean, what do you feel on that, Jason? I think Jason's Sprint phone got the best of him again. We'll get that answer here in a second. See, it always happens. I'm always like, oh, we lost Jason. And like 30 seconds into me saying that, oh, no, I'm here, I'm good. So we'll wait patiently for that. Let me ask Ben Bill, while we're waiting for Jason to get a good connection down there, why do you hate the Mets? Like, what made you root for the Red Sox as a Yankee fan in that game against the Red Sox, the Bill Buckner game and all that? What drives this hatred?
I will give you the Reader's Digest version. My grandparents grew up in Hell's Kitchen in New York City. They were always big Yankee fans. I'm a little bit older than you guys, so I really started following baseball in 1977 and 78, and I had a Reggie Jackson poster on my wall, and I remember as clear as day the day Thurman Munson died the year later. I went to my first Yankee game 2 weeks prior before he died in 79. My big hatred comes in from the Mets. You know what? I would love to continue the story. I got to run unexpectedly. I will catch up with you next time. Sorry.
Oh, you're killing me, Smalls. All right, next time you're telling us this whole thing. You know what it is? I don't think Bill really hates the Mets. I really don't. I think he just wanted to tell Jason he hates the Mets, because every time I ask him why, he ducks out on us early here. So I'm not entirely sure. Oh, excuse me. Not entirely sure that hatred is as legit as possible. Arlene, is you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Jason, you here, buddy?
I think we lost him.
All right, we'll wait on Jason.
Yeah.
No, he still lifted his arm. Oh, there he is, Jason.
Yeah.
Man, where'd you go?
Oh man, I had to pause with the phone, but it's all good now.
Now
The Mets were getting
two
more
sheep, right?
Oh,
I don't know
if
it's a phone connection or if it's ADD or what it is, but he's either not paying attention or buddy, I got to buy you a Verizon phone and mail it to you, one of the two.
I'll be upgrading the Sprint phone real soon, but go ahead.
Well, I wouldn't
that's
say
that's not true.
Well, you still have
he felt like the Mets were getting too much heat. The Mets were getting too much heat. He couldn't handle it.
It's all good.
Possibly,
we had a great
possibly.
Season.
That's
we had,
why he
dropped
off. Arlenas would have been the same thing. Well, Arlenas would
not
have been the
really.
Same thing. If the Yankees lost last night, Yeah, yeah. If the Yankees lost last night, we were like, oh, you're going. Oh,
speaking of Yankees.
We would have been like, hey, Olin, what's your take?
Let me tell you something. I'm an April scared. Alex Rodriguez is my favorite player in the world. As long as I can remember, I know how to take it.
Your favorite player?
No,
yeah. He's the reason why I like baseball, anyway.
Oh, huh? Okay.
Yes, he is.
Why? I thought you were a Gia girl.
No, I'm an April girl. I do love Gia, but I'm an April girl.
Hey, chicks like the long ball. Chicks dig the long ball.
That is true, and pretty much that's all A-Rod can do is hit the long ball or strike out, it seems like. So,
and commentating.
You know, hey.
To me, he was the breakout star this whole season on commentating for Fox. I mean, he did a phenomenal
job. Well, did you see him on the NFL thing when they had him throw a football and he overthrew him and broke the monitor? Did you guys see that?
Yeah, of course.
Saw that.
I shared with you
quite
guys.
Some time.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. It's been a while since he was a shortstop, so, you know, you got to forgive him for that throw and breaking the monitor.
It has been an awful long time for sure. So, again, Bill from Long Island he had the run unexpectedly. Again, he does have the kid situation and things and whatever, but he loves jumping on, loves talking to us. Make sure you read his articles on the Overtime Sports News Network. Make sure you read as well as Arlenas and Jason's articles, both mostly baseball-related. Now that baseball's over, they may be trending in this, but, again, gave us great, great articles there. Real quick news before we move on to some NFL stuff and maybe one or two more baseball things, but we have some other topics as well to go over. This show is going to take us from 6 to 8. We're going to lead directly into Monday Night Raw tonight. I mean, just because the Monday Night Football game to me doesn't matter as much. I don't have any fantasy players playing. I don't care about either team. So this is going to lead us from baseball to football right into WWE, which I know that both of you two enjoy as well. But let me just announce here, as you may or may not know, as a listener or reader of the Overtime Sports News Network, Becker College Athletics just wrapped up their home football schedule. They have two road games, but you could listen to those games live right here on the network, myself, as well as student broadcaster Randy Minogue. We're doing those games. Jason, you've listened to a couple of them. We are in talks right now to get Skidmore College Basketball, which is my other endeavor, up here on the network. Nash Lions team was for Division III, so hopefully we can get a little bit of some Skidmore action up on the site as well, and you guys can listen to that if you're a college basketball fan. Now, crazy week yesterday when it comes to injuries and things like that in the National Football League. We saw Bell go down. We saw Steve Smith go down. We saw Keenan Allen go down, all with severe season-ending injuries this late in the season. Luckily, the Giants and Cowboys, my team and your guys' teams, didn't have any significant injuries, but, again, both teams lost. One in dramatic shootout fashion, one in boring snoozefest, 1 point fashion, but either way, both lost. Do you guys feel right now that, you know, with the NFL the way that it is, and I believe Arlenas is off the line now. She's not much of a football fan anyway, but again, if she wants to call back in, she can. Jason, do you feel right now that with the state of the NFL with the injuries and things like that, it doesn't seem like there's a lot more players getting injured this season than there has been in the past?
Definitely seems like there's a lot more players getting injured, and it seems like everybody's having the same injury. MCL, ACL, knee, neck injuries, Achilles injuries. I mean, the Ravens lost their two best players to the same injury, both Achilles. So I definitely say it's definitely alarming that what's going on. And I feel terrible for Bell. Bell, to me, was like the number three back in the NFL, and when I saw the play in real time, I knew instantly he was done for the season. It's just the way that he landed on that knee, and a lot is being asked for the players nowadays, you know, and then do you get shorter weeks, you get the Thursday night game now and things like that. So the NFL is going to have to tighten up. They're going to have to tighten up, either expand the rosters, which I think they should have been looked at, or we might have to reevaluate the way we tackle. I mean, the NFL is in a tough spot with that because you don't want to change too much of the game as already is, because we saw a Madden-style college football game in New Orleans yesterday, and I don't think they want to have that as the main product.
Let me ask you real quick, too. We will get into that, but Dustin just sent me over a quick message. The status that he posted last night was about a couple of things. One, how valuable Tony Romo is to this team, but two, about how he feels that Tony Romo maybe should go to a new team and maybe should, you know, he for some reason delusionally thinks that they should trade Tony Romo and get a rookie and build a dynasty with the young talent that they have. He feels Romo won't be successful in Dallas, but he does deserve a ring. He's a Romo supporter, just not necessarily with our team. Now, he also said that he's done with this season. He also said that right now he feels the Cowboys are out of it. They're toast. They might not even breach the 7-game mark. He wanted me to ask you, do you feel that it's too early to panic?
I don't think the season's over. I don't think the season's lost at all. I mean, the Giants have shown they can't tackle anybody. The Cowboys' defense has been keeping them in the games. I mean, they should have beat Seattle. They should have won last week. I don't think all is lost.
Well, here's the thing. They should have beat the Falcons up 28-17 at halftime. Okay, but they couldn't put a single point on the board the second half. Couldn't beat the Saints. Okay. New England was never close, but no one expected it to be. And then
right. The
Giants game, obviously the snafu that they had there with the Giants game. And then obviously, yeah, should have beat. They had every reason in the world to win that game yesterday and obviously just couldn't get it done. Real quick, Dustin's badgering me, and I will get to this here. He wants me to read this word for word, the status, and then ask you this question. This is what Dustin posted yesterday. Dustin is our co-founder of the site. Obviously, the co-host, he's got some issues going on right now with things that he's got to do, so he's taking a step away from the airwaves, but he's still a main contributor to the site. And this is what he posted the other day. He says, and I quote, I wish I had an audio clip, but I don't, so I'm going to read, and I quote, "So unlike a few of my blind Cowboy fan friends," obviously referring to me, he put blind in capital letters, "I am just looking at what is in front of me. We have lost 5 straight. We weren't even looking that good in game 2. I literally would make Tony Romo my daughter's godfather if I could, but it is unfortunately time to move on. He is a stand-up guy, and he is an awesome role model out there for our youth, but he hasn't made it through 5 straight seasons without an injury. He is 100% the most elusive and underappreciated quarterback to fail today, but with our current team on the rise, we need to plan the future. Jerry completely stopped by letting Murray go. I will never forget that. We need to trade Romo to the highest bidder and either draft a Pro Bowl running back or a future elite quarterback. The offensive line will have get better, and the same goes for our defense, and the same goes for our receiving core. Dez is here for the long haul. Go trade Romo and even Witten for draft picks and start planning for the future. I just simply cannot handle holding my breath every season and watching some scumbag destroy our only hope at a deep playoff run by breaking Tony in half. It's been real, Tony, and you can end up on a team you can win the ring that you truly deserve. I just don't see it happening in Dallas." That is Dustin's status. And then he asked me to ask you if you think it's too early to panic. Now, I have reservations about what he said. You know, we do have conflicting opinions. That's why we were co-hosts. That's what makes for good radio. If we sat here like, yep, good point. I hear you. The whole time with each other, obviously it would make for boring radio. So we were back and forth with this whole thing. Dustin, obviously, I just read you his viewpoint. Real quick, before I get into my take on it, do you feel that it is too early to panic in Big D with just about half the season left to go?
Normally, I would say, yeah, it's time to panic. However, they're home next Sunday night, a divisional game, prime time.
They are.
That's the playoff game right there. They got to win that game. They don't win that game, the season is absolutely over. They win that game, they swept the Eagles.
That is really their midseason Super Bowl, right? I mean, that's their season.
That's it. That's their season.
Yes.
And,
well, here's the thing. Did you read the article? Did you get a chance to read the article that I posted last night?
No, I didn't get a chance to read that one yet.
In response to his? Well, okay. Well, in response to his to Dustin's statements, I had posted an article saying, and it was memoirs of a hurt but still optimistic Cowboys fan. Now, Dustin has several occasions called me out for being overly optimistic and to get off my soapbox and take the beer goggles off and this and that and, you know, not looking at it as a realist. Well, I'm looking at it from both perspectives. One, as a realist, but two, as a, you know, as a fan as well. And that's sort of what drove that article. And basically what it said, it wasn't a lot of journalistic prowess. It was mostly just research. But what it was knowing that even at 2-5, the poor division that we're in, they're not out of it at this moment, okay? They have been competitive. Their defense has kept them in games now that they've got Hardy and McClain back. All right, they're in a division where the Giants are inconsistent. They put up, you know, what, 48 points or something last week, or today, well, technically, it's still the same week. So, yes, but they have zero defense, is at least what it looks like. And the Eagles have been flat out bad. The Reds don't know what. Okay, so what my article said and what my article stated was that the Dallas Cowboys are not out of this yet, but they need to beat Philly next week. And I believe it's Monday night. Maybe it's Sunday night. Either way. They need to beat them next week. Now, it's Sunday night. Now, tell me if you sort of agree with this statement here that I'm about to make. The Dallas Cowboys are at 2-5, okay? 2-1 in division play. They've been competitive, okay? Competitive in every single game except New Orleans. New England. They have had a chance to win and been in right at the last second in every single game except New England. And now you look at the Giants, who are 4-4 now, I believe, and they are even in the division. You've got the Eagles 3-4. You've got the Redskins 3-4. Okay, Cowboys are only a game out on this whole thing. Yes, we're in last. I understand that. But you beat Philly, okay? Let's say you beat Philly. Then you've got a Tampa Bay team that's beyond beatable, even with the current team that we have. I don't think Jameis Winston is going to be able to do much against this pass rush with the secondary. Let's say, optimistically, you go out and you get two wins over a bad Philly team whose number you already have, okay, who you could have beaten with me at quarterback week two, okay, who looked abysmal against Carolina in their last game, okay? It's a Sam Bradford that I don't trust. Let's say you win that game. You're 3-5. Okay. Giants play the Bucks. Let's say the Giants get the win there. I'm not saying – I think the Giants could lose the game, but I think that they will beat the Bucks. Okay. Then you've got your Cowboys now at 3-5. Then they go out and they play Tampa Bay, okay, in the final game before Romo comes back. We win that game. We're 4-5. Okay. Then Romo gets back. We somehow find a way with Romo to beat an average and inconsistent Miami team without Cameron Wake. Boom, 5-5 going into that Carolina game on Thanksgiving. Okay, win, lose, or draw in this division, that that 5-5 record is going to be right in the mix. It might not be leading the division, but it probably won't be last in the division either. If we can rattle off these next two wins, these past five losses really get negated. Because the Giants have the meat of their schedule coming up. The Redskins have the meat of their schedule coming up. The Eagles have a couple of tough games, but for the most part, they've played their tough games, but they're just not that good overall. So you look at these coming up. The Giants still have to play the Patriots. The Giants still have to play the rest of the division games. The Giants have they just lost to New Orleans. They got a tough game against Minnesota. They've got, you know, they have games that are on their schedule that you look at and say, if the Giants show up like they showed up yesterday, they're going to lose these games. Dallas has a stretch coming up here in November and early December of some pretty winnable ball games. They play the Redskins twice. They've got the Eagles coming up in this game. They got the Bucks. They got an inconsistent Miami team. Yes, they play Carolina. That's tough, but okay. Then you look at let me pull up the schedule here real quick because I think this has to be brought to the limelight here. The Dallas Cowboys have the Eagles, then the Bucks, okay, then the Dolphins. We already established that. Then Carolina, then Redskins, Packers, Jets, Bills, Redskins to end the season. Okay, I feel both Redskins games they win. The Bills obviously are not what we thought they were going to be. The Jets are not going to have a starting quarterback. No faith in Geno Smith. I think that the Cowboys, once they get hot, they get Romo back, they get everybody healthy, find a way to win that game. The Packers, okay, that's going to be their only other test in Lambeau. Are they going to be able to go out and get redemption, get revenge from, you know, that what should have been a catch last season? Are they going to be able to go out and do that? If they lose that game, it might put some breaks on their playoff push here, but if they're able to win that game, I think that they win out, if they win that game, of course. But then you look at, okay, you look at the Giants' schedule coming up, okay, because that's really the only team that really matters going forward. I don't think the other two teams are really going to be in the mix, okay? The Giants have the Bucks coming up, okay, winnable game. I think we both agree on that. Then they got the Patriots, Redskins, Jets, Dolphins, Panthers, Vikings, and Eagles. Okay, the Vikings have proven that they're probably going to be a playoff team this year. They got Jets, Dolphins, Panthers, Vikings all in a row, okay? And then they got the Patriots two games before that. The Giants have the toughest part of our schedule, Atlanta, Seattle, New England. They're all done. They're all behind us. The rest of the three teams in this division have their toughest opponents coming up. So, do we need a little help? Sure. But once, if we can rattle off these two wins, and tell me if you agree with me here, if we can rattle off these two wins, we can somehow find a way with this defense to go out there and beat Philadelphia and then beat Tampa Bay and be 2-5, that would be 4-5, and then get Romo back, okay, and have Romo have his heroic performance coming back and finding a way to scrape one out against Miami. And we go 5-5 into the Carolina game on Thanksgiving with all this momentum, having won in three straight, fully healthy again. Do you feel that things might be trending in a different direction here? Do you feel that the Cowboys might actually be in the mix of this whole thing? Because I definitely do. I feel maybe Jason has some phone things. I know he can hear me, but sometimes he has phone connecting issues. So I'm going to continue here real quick, and he can cut in when he wants to. I definitely feel. Oh, there you are. Did you catch a lot of that?
Yeah, I just caught it. I caught most of it, but I had to disconnect the phone and put it back on. Sprint. Ladies and gentlemen, don't get Sprint.
Well, you'd think in a place the size of New York City, with the population of New York City, that any cell network would work. But, again, who knows? But do you feel that, okay, I'm not going to go through the whole spiel again, but if Dallas is able to rattle off a couple of wins here and go and be 5-5 going into the Carolina game, which is, despite what Dustin thinks, 100% possible at this moment with the way that the defense has played, Dez being back, the way that McFadden has played, with a couple of inferior opponents coming up, at least in my opinion, they go 5-5 and in that Carolina game on Thanksgiving, with the Giants, Redskins, and Eagles all having tough games coming up, do you feel that maybe this division might look a little bit different in mid-November?
I honestly do. I think we all know that championship resumes are built in November and December. Forget about October 2 months, forget about September. I think if the Cowboys win this game right here, Sunday night, prime time, it will rejuvenate the team. It'll spark the offense, which is only going to get better. Dez is going to have a complete two games under his belt. Tampa's beatable. I think you guys play Miami, correct? After Tampa?
Yeah, we got Miami. We got Philly, Tampa, Miami, and then Carolina.
They win this game. They could win the next two. They could win the next three, I mean. They win this game.
Exactly.
I can see them.
And they could be 5-5.
I can see them
in Tampa. But then you got the Giants, right, who play the Bucks. Okay, let's say, boom, that's a win.
I think the Giants are going to lose that game.
But then
if
the Patriots, Jets, Dolphins.
Well, the Giants
lose to the Bucks.
I think if the Bucks that showed up in Atlanta show up at home, they might beat the Giants. Even if the Giants win that game, they're not beating the Patriots, and they're not beating the Jets. I think the Jets are going to be focused after what happened to them. And the Jets have the luxury of playing two home games before they play the Giants.
How about those Oakland Raiders?
Oh, they're for real. They're for real.
Wait a minute here.
Everybody said
you have a new voice.
For the season, you are out of your mind for picking the Raiders as a dark horse.
And I said, you know what? I got a gut feeling, something about this kid, Carr, and Amari Cooper. And, man, have they made me look good. But, people, listen, my biggest problem with this movie, and I had to call in because I can't listen to this love fest anymore. For a Giants fan, you got a lot of respect for the Cowboys, Jason. My biggest problem is week two against the Philadelphia Eagles with our starting quarterback, Mr. Tony Romo, we looked like complete trash. That game was the ugliest first half of football I've ever seen in my life, and he goes down. And now Chris is so optimistic after going 0-5. I repeat, 0-5 against the Falcons, the Saints, the Patriots, the Giants, and the Seahawks, that we're going to somehow, the second Romo gets back, the second he shows up in Cowboys equipment, we're going to run the table. This is my problem, people.
Tony, I didn't say run the table.
He looked good in week two. He didn't look good in week two. He looked all right in week one. We all know what he can do. He looked okay in the playoffs last year. But we're assuming that the perfect storm is going to happen. And that's my problem. What happens if next week Dez re-breaks his foot? What happens if in 2 weeks Dez tweaks his foot? What happens if in 3 weeks when Romo comes back, Zach Martin tears his ACL? This is my point, right? Everything's working okay right now. Our defense is playing way better than they should have been. But what happens when Mr. Injury-prone Sean Lee goes down ultimately, right? This is my point. It seems like we can never just fire on all cylinders. And Chris, being very optimistic and very Dallas, I love my Cowboys guy, Mr. Chris McSwiggin, this division's still winnable. The Giants scored 40-something points yesterday and lost the football game. Okay? You can chalk that up to the Giants having a garbage defense. You can chalk that up to the Saints being the better team. But the fact of the matter is in my eyes, the Giants are only going to get better as the season goes on. Because let me tell you, losing a football game after you put up 48 points, it hurts. But I'm feeling pretty good about what we're going to do next week on offense.
The Giants, to me, the Giants are inconsistent. The Giants scored 40 points, whatever. But you look at the game against Philly, they looked absolutely like a JV team. And then in the game against us,
how did we look gifted, last five
we gifted,
games, Chris?
Well, I'm getting there. We gifted them points off 17, I believe it was, off of turnovers. The three interceptions, the punt return touchdown, the touchdown that we had taken away because of the BS offensive holding call or whatever that was. We gifted the Giants those points. The Giants did not beat us in that game. In fact, Dallas dominated most of that game. So that is why I'm not really concerned
That's all coulda, woulda, shoulda stuff. The reason why I think Tony Romo is the best elusive quarterback in the game is he finds a way to make something happen when it needs to happen. Now, I'm not saying that last pass play that Castle made yesterday where he got picked off, that was the definitive moment in that game. There was about 50 passes that could have been completed, that should have been completed, that would have never put us in that position to begin with. I was all for saying, let's get Whedon out of there and go on to Matt Castle. I just didn't realize that Matt Castle sucked too. I was thinking, 08 Patriots and blah, blah, blah. You got them 11 wins. And I forgot that they got this guy named Bill Belichick over there. And we got this other retard named Jason Garrett over here who doesn't even know how to stand up to his defensive lineman who's shitting on his coaching staff. So my biggest problem with what's going on right now in Dallas is that they are literally about to implode. Okay, this defense is playing very, very good. Not only that, this defense is playing, we can make it to the Super Bowl good. But the problem is the offense isn't putting up any numbers. Okay, Tony Romo wins that game, all right, yesterday. Tony Romo wins that game. Tony Romo makes that throw. Tony Romo
blew out Seattle yesterday.
Yeah, Tony Romo probably got the Cowboys up 28-12. It's not even a game. So my problem with what's going on is the fact that we can either sell high now and try to plan for the future, or we can ride it out, maybe get a Super Bowl appearance. Do I think we'll win? Who knows? How healthy can we be when we get there? My point is, and Jason, this is why I wanted to ask you, because I know that Chris clearly doesn't agree with me, but my point is, part of my favorite part of playing Madden is I draft all the young guys with all the potential, and I watch their ratings go from 75 and 80 to 93 in like 4 years, and then I got the best team in football. I use right. that approach in real life, too. I'm thinking, we got one hell of an O-line. Well, kind of, because guess what? It's their fault that Romo's sitting on the sidelines to begin with. But we got a pretty decent young O-line that's only going to get better. So we got a defense that's, God, it's outperforming expectations. This Greg Hardy guy looks like he might be sticking around in town for at least 3 more years if Jerry can get a deal done. So Byron Jones, who shut
Maybe.
Down Rob Gronkowski,
he might.
We got a lot of solid players. Skandrick might come back healthy and better than ever. So my point is, why not ride this wave and say, guess what, Tony, I love you to pieces, but where do you want to go? Where would you like to go? Give me 5 teams. Five
teams. I guarantee you he would stay there. I guarantee you he would stay.
You know what's funny about that, though? That's the Bill Belichick way. I don't think Jerry Jones thinks that way, but Bill Belichick, he would definitely he'll definitely.
But can we agree that
there.
The Bill Belichick way wins, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So this is my
absolutely.
Point. If I'm trying to win, you gotta get Romo out of town before he's not worth anything. Because guess what happens? He comes back, right? We fizzle out. We're not making the playoffs, all right? Everybody needs to get over this. It's just not going to happen. The Giants are not going to collapse like you expect them to. They just got. They're getting pieces back. They're going to get more healthy as the year goes on. We go the other way, okay? So the Giants they have no pressure on them. They're sitting atop the division at 4-4. They just put up an offensive record and lost the football game. I don't see how they can possibly screw up being in the driver's seat. And then let's not forget about the Eagles. They're just going to get better as the year goes on because they're going to develop some chemistry. They might finally get this no-huddle thing working. They might let DeMarco Murray run the ball the power way that he should because guess what? DeMarco started looking good the last 2 weeks, and that's why they started to do better. So everybody's forgetting
the
division,
eight.
Everybody, yeah, listen, I don't even think we're going to get to 8-8. Will the Giants win it at 8-8? Will the Giants win it at 9-7? Probably, yeah, yes. But I don't see us getting
because there's at least 4 more games in the schedule that they're going to lose. I mean, they still play the Patriots, still play the Panthers, who are on fire right now, still play the Vikings, who are looking pretty darn good.
You're going to tell me right now that the Giants are going to lose to the Patriots after they beat them in the biggest game ever, and the Patriots are going to come out trying to make a statement, and then dipshit elite Eli is going to come out and just torch them like he always does.
No, I think that the Patriots are going to lose possibly one game this season. And let me just – hold on. Let me just pull up the Patriots schedule here.
The Patriots, that AFC, the race for number 1 and 2 seed, it's on between the Bengals, the Broncos, and the Patriots. So they got
to – Well, right now, I was getting to this point before we got on to the schedule to the Cowboy thing. The San Francisco 49ers just traded Vernon Davis – to the Broncos. That was breaking news about an hour ago. So now, when Thomas left, Julius Thomas left, now they've got that big tight end again. Now they've got a guy like Vernon Davis that they can use again. The only game on this schedule remaining for the Patriots, which is cake, honestly. Redskins, Giants, Bills, Broncos, Eagles, Texans, Titans, Jets, Dolphins. The only game I see them losing in the regular season potentially is that Broncos game, okay, because it's in
didn't
Denver.
Just,
That's the only
didn't
reason.
Didn't they just barely beat the Jets? Barely?
I wouldn't say barely. They had that game in control.
Last drive of the game after being dominated defensively the whole game. Yeah, I would say barely.
I mean, Jets needed 2 scores with like 30 seconds, so I don't know if that's barely beating. But, I mean, it's one of those things where, okay, the Jets always play them tough, but the fact of the matter is the Patriots got it done like they always do. The Broncos are the only team in the schedule that's going to beat them. Patriots are going to be 15-1 going into the playoffs here, be the 1 seed, blah, 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 blah. The only team I feel that's built to beat them in the playoffs possibly is Cincinnati or Denver. But this Patriots team is a machine, and there's absolutely no way that the Giants defense, the way that the Giants defense played yesterday, having two games, they got the Bucs and then they got the Patriots, having that Patriots game There's no way. The Patriots are probably going to put up 50-plus if the Patriots show that defensive showing, or the Giants show that defensive showing. I mean, the Patriots have scored 30 points in every single game this season, okay? And the Giants are, okay, sometimes they scored 20. They scored 40-something yesterday, but that was an anomaly. I mean, I don't understand why people think that all of a sudden this division is crowned. This is the worst division in football right now. It's worse than the AFC South. At least the AFC South.
No, dude,
it's worse than the AFC South, not record-wise, but at least in the AFC South you have teams that, you know, I'm afraid of. Jacksonville, young and upcoming team. Blake Bortles is hot. Yeah, they have a tough schedule, but whatever. The Colts, okay, they got Andrew Luck. They can beat some teams. Houston's got that defense. They're blah, blah, blah. I'm not afraid. If I'm an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, I'm not afraid of any team in this division, not a single team. The Cowboys come into town. Yeah, they got a great defense. Can't do anything on offense. Giants come into town. They don't play any defense. Yeah, they got a good offense, but they're inconsistent. Eagles come to town. Sam Bradford hasn't scared anybody since 06. Redskins come to town. Well, we all know what they are. Not afraid of a single team in this division. I would rather play a team in this division than I would play Houston or Jacksonville right now. And that's just me. And when it comes to, when it comes down to this whole thing, the Dallas Cowboys. All they got to do, okay, I'm not saying they will. I'm not a mind reader. I don't have a magic eight ball. I'm not coming out saying, okay,
Jason,
well, yeah,
are the Cowboys
going to
win
good.
Out? Jason, will the
no,
Cowboys win out
that.
When Romo shows up?
I'm not saying they win out. I'm saying
nah,
that they get a lot
win.
Of
they're
help.
They're not
going to
win out. They're
division.
Not going
to
win out.
No, I don't say they
point.
Win out.
They'll
but
need
I say they get a lot of help.
Win the division.
I say they get a lot of help. From the division, I say the Giants fall apart, the Eagles suck, the Redskins suck. That's what happens.
But I will say this to Dustin's theory. I think in the offseason you do have to examine that option of trading Romo because you have to strengthen. You can't rely on him. You can't rely on him.
Absolutely not.
You can't
really?
Rely on him. And on top of that.
Wow. Okay, keep going. No, keep going. I'll let you finish. I'll do my best.
I was gonna refer to the Matt Harvey situation. Matt Harvey was looked at as the villain up until last night, but he pitched the 9 innings and everybody was happy about it. But in the back of my mind, I know the Mets have no intention of re-signing him. They're gonna try. They're gonna look to trade him and get assets. There's nothing wrong with that.
Pimp him out.
You did the same thing. You did the same thing with Dickey, and you got back Syndergaard. And your catcher. So, hey, I'm all for
Doesn't everybody remember what happened with LeBron James when he left Cleveland the first time? That was the whole point. You got to if you know a dude's going to leave, then you might as well get something for us. I don't think Tony Romo will leave the Cowboys in free agency because he'll be 42. But my point is, he's going to retire.
Oh, yeah.
So if he's going to retire, you might as well send him somewhere he wants to go. That's potentially willing to give you a first or second round pick and get something for the future out of him. I would never in a million years ride out Peyton Manning right now. No chance. If I'm the Denver Broncos.
Even the way he played
okay,
last night?
Oh, are you kidding me? If I'm the Denver Broncos, I'm trading Peyton Manning to like the Cleveland Browns. Or a team that's just never, ever, ever had a quarterback and never, ever will because they just have a curse over their heads. And this guy will put butts in seats because he's going to break a few records on his way out the door, and he may make them a playoff team, but nothing better. That's the point. Get some assets. Get some future something out of a veteran like that. Like a guy like, okay, so a guy like Tom Brady, he is diffusing that situation. You want to know how? By saying he wants to play until he's 50. The Patriots will never look ahead like that because guess what? They think this dude's going to legitimately suit up until he's 50 years old. But Peyton Manning every year, oh, I got to analyze it. I got to see what I want to do. I got to go get my neck looked at. Like, he leaves you hanging. Same thing with the Brett Favre thing. They finally were like, all right, Brett, we're sorry, man, but we got to move on. But that's because they wanted to give Rodgers a shot. Cowboys got nobody sitting in the reins. Nobody's
right.
Waiting. So you got to start looking ahead. Listen, and I said it. I said it in my status. The dude, I'd make him my kid's godfather. He's such a great guy. But my point is, before he starts to majorly deteriorate, the reason why I think we might not get a first-round pick over him is because everyone thinks he's injury-prone. It's a fact.
You'll probably get a fourth or third round for him.
Exactly. But here's the thing, then. This is a guy that we were talking about preseason, okay, before the season started, we were in the early stage of the show, a guy that was going to throw for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, a guy that was underappreciated, which we've seen he is, a guy that is better than everybody says that he is, blah, 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 blah. Now, let's say this whole thing happens. It's never going to happen because I'm pretty sure that Jerry Jones and Tony Romo have some sort of a love situation outside of football. I'm not going to, you know, make any accusations, but those two are tight. Let's say that. And I don't think I understand what Dustin's saying and why, but it's not going to happen. But you put Romo, let's say hypothetically it does, you put Romo on a team, okay, a guy that is quote-unquote injury-prone, okay? You put him on a team with an inferior offensive line because you asked him, where do you want to go? Well, I guarantee you he's not going to want to go anywhere but stay where he's at. So you put him on
a
team.
Well, you know where I can guarantee you? You know where I can guarantee you he'd get at least a second-round pick? Houston.
What? Okay. Houston, well, yeah, because Houston needs a quarterback. But are you kidding me, though? He would be – Tony Romo would probably
wouldn't even
die
have to leave the state
in Houston. He would probably die in Houston. If he's getting hurt with arguably the best offensive line in football, although they've underperformed this season,
this is my point, though. Put a package deal together. Send him out with Witten. Send him
I got the perfect place for Romo and the perfect situation for the Dallas Cowboys. You trade him to San Diego. Phillip Rivers doesn't want to be part of this relocating mess. Find a package deal to get him out of there. He's built for the Cowboys offense. That's what you guys need. Phillip Rivers.
Okay, I understand that. And I would love to have Phillip Rivers on our team. In fact, I think Phillip Rivers is a top 10 quarterback without question. But talking about the Romo thing, though, you say that, you know, you want him to go get the ring that he deserves, but you don't think it's going to happen in Dallas and blah, 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 blah. You know, and then you say, okay, ship him out with Witten or ship him out with whoever. Romo's not going to be able to throw the ball to whoever you ship him out with laying on his back. I mean, the only reason the Texans don't have a quarterback situation is the fact that the guy's under pressure every single snap. They got no offensive line. They've got
really, it's not because Matt Schaub, who is the face of that franchise, threw like four pick sixes to start three seasons ago. It was because of the pressure.
I'm talking this season.
No, Matt Schaub was a bust. They don't have a quarterback because Matt Schaub was a bust. Matt Schaub was lighting it up. Dude, Matt Schaub was like the number one pick in fantasy football leagues like 4 years ago.
Yeah, but they didn't draft a quarterback. You know why? They didn't draft a quarterback because the Patriots put all of this emphasis on how good Ryan Mallett was in practice and how good Ryan Mallett was in the preseason.
No, it's because the former Patriots coach went to Houston and took his guy with him. That's why.
Well,
it has nothing to do with Patriots sales. Bill O'Brien was a Belichick guy, and Mallett is a Belichick guy. So guess what? All right, I watched this dude with a cannon sit behind Brady for 3 years. Come on down. Let's
Mallett's
give you
awful
a shot. You think
Mallett
you can be a starter? Let's do it.
I mean, Mallett is got awful. My whole point behind this whole big thing, because we do have one more NFL topic before we get to WWE. My whole point behind this big thing is, you trade Romo anywhere else, he has no shot. Unless he goes to Green Bay, unless he goes to Denver, unless he goes to a good contending team who already have quarterbacks. The only one needing one right now would be Denver, possibly, if Peyton leaves. But he's got no shot. The only shot he's got is staying in Dallas right now because he's not going to have an offensive line that's conducive. He's going to go into probably a losing team because that's the only team that's going to really need a quarterback of his caliber. So he's going to have no shot at the ring if he goes anywhere else. And I think he knows that. Jerry knows that. And Romo's not going anywhere. Witten's not going anywhere. We're going to have to learn to deal with them. We're going to have to learn to protect him better. And we're going to have to make a system where he gets the ball out of his hands quicker. That's just what's going to happen. I guarantee you, hand to God, he's not going anywhere because Jerry Jones will not allow that to happen. Now,
I don't think he'll go anywhere. I was just saying, if you're smart and if you want to start the next dynasty, you trade your guy now while he's still worth something, and you start looking to the future. You know, I don't even know what – you're going to have to ask Chris, the guy who loves shitty college football, for the best quarterback available this year. Probably isn't even one because I haven't heard anything. At least when Manziel was there, you
Goff,
heard his name and
Jared Goff
highlights every damn year.
Yeah, Jared Goff or Connor Cook, California and Michigan State, respectively. Neither one of those two, I don't think, are going to be, you know, not going to come in to be the next, you know, like that 04 class. So the Rivers,
yeah,
and,
I think,
yeah,
I think
not going to be an Andrew
Walker
Walker
this year is going to be on the defensive end this year.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's not really going to be a stacked draft as like last year.
Yeah, man. I mean, look at Gurley, right? Look at the running backs that, man, wish I could have gotten a piece of that last year.
Well,
Gurley
and Gordon. Gordon's underproducing. I'm not too impressed with Melvin Gordon, but Todd Gurley's an animal. He really is.
Beast.
But who would have predicted, right, that the guy that just got his knee rebuilt was going to be the more productive of the two? Like, nobody was taking that chance.
Oh, no,
so it's like
definitely
that,
not.
I mean, I guess there's just no way anybody could have called that. My whole point was on this whole thing was that Tony's awesome. I get it. I hope to God that, that he wins a ring with the Cowboys and Witten and blah, blah, blah. But the problem is we're 2-5 right now, and it's going to take a 2-5 season, a 1-6 season, or an 0-7 season in order to get a quality new franchise quarterback. So instead of waiting 3 more years that ultimately won't end up in the Super Bowl with Tony Romo, why not just get it over with now, was my point. Just get it over with, trade him while you can, get something for it, free up some cap space, build the rest of the team around you, and then pray to God you get lucky with a franchise QB in the draft over the next 2 years. But instead, we're going to ride Romo out for 3 more years. He'll get hurt again, probably. Screw us over in 2 more years, and we're going to have another season like this. And we're still gonna have to go through the 2 years of no wins in order to get a quality quarterback. So just better sooner rather than later, because guess what? In 3 years, that O-line's going to look a little thin. You know, Dez is going to be 3 years older, might be losing a step. You know, Hardy certainly won't be what he's going to be right now. That defense, Sean Lee, might be gone. So that's my point.
True.
Time is not on our side. These guys are not all 1 year into the league superstars. They are like 5, 6 years in the league superstars. Collins, okay, he's looking good. He's our only young O-lineman now. Zach Martin's been in the league for 3 years, right? And then you're talking Frederick.
This is the second
been up
season.
There. Frederick's
season.
Been up
well,
there for 5,
season.
I think.
No,
so
the only offensive
like,
lineman
and then
who's
Smith.
Old enough is Leary.
Smith's
he's
our number one dude, right? Mr. Left
he's
tackle, best
years.
Left tackle.
He's a 5 year
and
guy.
He's going to be old in 3 years. So
well,
it's
no,
because
like, he was so young coming in. He's only 23 or 20, like, yeah, like 23 right now or something like that. So
he's older than 20. Our youngest
I don't think he is, yo.
Is Lyle Collins, and then it's Zach Martin. Smith's actually, like, him and Doug Free are the veterans on the O-line.
Yeah, but there was something. I'm going to look this up real quick. We do have some Colts talk before we go on to WWE, but I'm going to look this up real quick because there was something that they were saying that he, like, redshirted or something, and he came into the league super young. Tyrone Smith. I don't even think he was 21 when he came into the league. Hold on. Tyrone Smith is Dallas Cowboys.
But, yeah, my point is start now. Rebuild, like, think
yeah,
about
24.
It. I think Eli
so
I think
young.
Eli is going to outlast Romo. I think Romo will retire before Eli, so then look at who's going to run the division. In 3 or 4 years, Romo's out, Cowboys are nothing, and Eli's going to be like that savvy Peyton Manning vet of the NFC East, and he's going to have the Redskins, Sam Bradford, assuming he even sticks around, and then,
he's only on
and
a
then whoever's
deal.
Left in Dallas, this is going to be the Giants division for the next, like, 7 years if we don't start planning for the future. So, I don't know, man. I'm not looking forward to it.
The Indianapolis Colts, are they possibly mentioning something about sanctions for their injury reporting, which actually is kind of funny because the Patriots have been botching injury reports for years and no one batted an eyelash. But now they're saying that because of injury reports and misreporting Andrew Luck, who's been playing with broken ribs, they may end up getting sanctions. Who knows what that would be, if it would be draft picks, money, whatever it might be. They may end up getting penalized. Andrew Luck, obviously not 100%, going up against a very good Carolina team in defense tonight. Indy can put up points, but they've been massively underwhelming this season. I think that the prediction for tonight, obviously I put on my picks that Carolina wins. Do you guys both feel that Carolina wins this game, and is it close, or does Carolina just completely dominate this game tonight?
I think it's going to be close. I think Andrew Luck alone is going to help keep it close. Other than that, I mean, it's definitely a tale. It's going to be definitely Carolina's defense versus Andrew Luck's mental game. I don't see Cam doing – I see Cam having a good game, but I don't see Andrew Luck having too much mistakes in this game. You know, that's just my thing.
We have
– I think it'll be a good game.
So the Panthers win, though.
Yeah, the Panthers still win.
Okay. I will be monitoring this this game on my phone. However, I will be watching a little something different tonight. I am actually going to be watching.
And, of course, if you're not down with that, we got two words for you!
Now, of course, I don't have any WWE theme music, so that is the closest thing I have right in front of me. But I'm going to be watching Raw tonight because it's a little bit more interesting to me than, obviously, this game is tonight. So let me ask you, you're a WWE guy. You've showed up alongside me on Dustin's podcast for the Ref Told Wrestling. Let me ask you the direction that WWE is going in right now. With Roman Reigns getting this push, he's the next big guy. He won the Fatal 4-Way match, and he's going to face Rollins the next pay-per-view. Okay, boom. Do you agree with the Reigns push, or is this a little it's Roman Reigns again, here we go.
I agree with it only because we're at that point with them where it's like it's kind of like back to the Cowboys and Giants. It's about availability. John Cena's taking some time off. Randy Orton's taking time off. There's not too many baby faces left on the roster. You know, Alberto Del Rio is not a baby face. So who else do you really have to throw at Rollins right now?
I'm thinking is you stick with the heel thing. I think right now your biggest push is the Wyatt family. And I think right now, with as dominant as the Wyatt family's been, you have the Wyatt family's new quest be get the belt off of Rollins. Because tell me if you think this is right. And, Dustin, if you're still listening, feel free to send me a message and let me know if you agree with this as well. Here's what I would do. If I'm working WWE Creative, here's what I would do, okay? You look at what they've done in the past 2 weeks with Kane and with The Undertaker, okay, with sort of carrying them out a little bit, okay? What this reminds me of is the old Ministry. Now, you remember how the Ministry of Darkness recruited members? They came out, beat them down, dragged them in the back. Next week, boom, they're part of their faction. This sort of – what I would do here is I would have this become a conglomerate. I would have Demon Kane join up with the Wyatt family here and be that dark entity sort of similar to the Ministry. And I would have them be the new dominant faction stable. They're going to come after the title, but yet they're going to take out Roman, try to take out Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose with it, because we all know about the beef with Reigns and the Wyatts. And the Shield is going to have to come together and unite against the Wyatts. And the WWE Authority is going to say, Rollins, I know you don't like the two of them, but we can't have them running roughshod. It's not the best for business. We need you to join up with these two to try to put them down. Meanwhile, there's going to be different title shots here and there. We're going to have dissension between the two with the Reigns title shot, and we're going to have Wyatt coming after the title. And I think out of nowhere, Sheamus cashes in Money in the Bank, takes the belt, and we see the Shield reunite to go up against the Wyatts, and we have another big stable like the DX Incorporation that we had back in the Attitude Era. I think that would be kind of cool to see two stables go at each other like the Attitude Era did, both of which would be physical, both of which would have a lot of the big names. And I think that would be something interesting to see the good versus evil and the Shield, as massively popular as they were, come back. Now, is that going to happen? I don't think so. But that would be kind of cool. And everyone's like, well, why would...
That would be cool.
Well, everyone's like, well, why would Rollins do that? Well, he has his best interests in mind, too, because you're going to have Wyatt saying, I want to take the belt. So not only Are you going to have the Wyatts be a threat to them in that regard? But you're also going to have the fact that the authority is saying, look, we need to put the Wyatt family down. We need you guys to, you know, you're the only ones who can do it. We need you to reunite and sort of go after them here. So I think that that might be kind of cool to see the dissension with the Shield and sort of the whole shaky Shield thing versus the dominant Wyatts, who are just creepy, who everyone for some reason seems to love except for Dustin. So, you know, I think that that would be cool. I just don't like the whole way that they're going right now with Roman Reigns getting the push. What's going to happen? He's going to go to the pay-per-view. He's going to get beat again. And, you know, it's just, I mean, at this point, it's all moot. Whoever faces Seth Rollins, it doesn't matter because Sheamus is going to take the belt off him at some point because he has to before the next pay-per-view. So it's going to be one of those things where he's going to be in a tough match. Sheamus is going to come out. He's going to steal the belt. And then, well, boom, we're back at square one. So I don't really care right now who the babyface is or who's that or who's that. I want to see something interesting. And the Shield reuniting to go against the Wyatts, to me, would be interesting. What do you think is next for Lesnar?
Lesnar is in such a limbo. I don't even know where, like, who would you book him against? I mean,
there's really nobody.
And he doesn't look like they're not going to put the belt on him anytime soon. And they're definitely not looking like they're going to.
Yeah.
And they're not going to tease him towards fighting Rollins. So, I don't know, maybe Lesnar.
What I'd like to see is Lesnar Triple H.
But we saw that already.
I would like
I don't think we're going to see that.
Well, yeah, we did see that already. But he's the only one really. I mean, who else on this roster could do it? I mean, The Undertaker was cool because he came back and he's an Attitude Era guy and I grew up on him, blah, 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 blah. But like you said, there's really nobody else on this roster that's physically impending enough unless you put him against the champion. But then you can't take the belt off the champ, but yet Lesnar's supposed to be unbeatable. So it's like, who. You know, who is going to – yeah, what is he going to do, you know? What is that?
I have a theory. I have a strong feeling we're not going to see Lesnar until maybe Royal Rumble time.
Okay.
And something happens between him and Randy Orton, and then we get that match heading into WrestleMania. I could see him doing work with Randy Orton because at this point, they're going to have to do something new. We never seen that before.
Okay.
They kind of crossed paths when Lesnar was hot when his first WWE go around. Randy wasn't up the pipe yet, so that'll be something they might want to visit. And
I'm
hearing
rumors
that Daniel Bryan. Go ahead.
Oh well, I said, is the Money in the Bank pay per view after WrestleMania or before it?
After WrestleMania, it's the pay per view after
WrestleMania. So what if Paul Heyman wants to add another accomplishment to the belt of Brock Lesnar, and he says, okay, I'm going to enter Lesnar in the Rumble. And Lesnar wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to fight for the title at WrestleMania. Who knows? It might still be Rollins by then. I hope it's not, but it might be. Sheamus cashes in Money in the Bank on Lesnar, just like Rollins cashed it in that match at WrestleMania. And he gets screwed twice by the Money in the Bank guy happening. And then all of a sudden you have a Sheamus and Lesnar rivalry because those two are both big guys, blah, 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 blah. You push Sheamus, then you can put the belt on him because then it's a new guy that he fought and blah, 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 blah. So I definitely think that might be maybe what they're leaning towards. But what was your Daniel Bryant rumors?
I was hearing that he might be ready to go before the Rumble. So that might be something if they want to visit a David versus Goliath. But then I don't know if I would want to put Daniel Bryan in that kind of harm's way. So, I don't know. It's a tough call. But I definitely like that theory.
Tough.
I like that theory because
it's definitely
at this
tough.
Point,
that's what I would do if it were me, if I was in charge of it.
And also, the other rumors that I'm hearing down the windpipe is at Survivor Series, we're going to have the Wyatts versus Kane, Undertaker, and two mystery partners. One of the mystery partners I'm hearing that makes a lot of sense is Finn Balor. Think about it. 25 years ago, Undertaker made his debut out of nowhere at Survivor Series. Now, this could be the time. This might be the best time to push the Demon Balor up the main roster.
Huh. That definitely could be an option as well. There's so much talent in the NXT division that I'm surprised that the only people that they've really brought up are, you know, a fat slob like Kevin Owens and then the girls. That's really it. So I'm hoping that we see a little bit of that. So we are going to cut off a little early because, I mean, the topic, we actually, with Dustin calling in, we actually moved through a little quicker than we thought today. But in about a half hour, you're going to see Monday Night Raw. And, you know, all the questions, or some of the questions at least, may be answered. But then again, they may not. That's what the WWE's been trending lately. This has been Mediation Monday. Chris McSwiggin alongside, well, not really alongside, but I guess verbally alongside, Jason Cordonaire. We had Bill from Long Island call in. We had Arlenas call in. We had Dustin call in. We had all sorts of great appearances today. A lot of good sports talk. The NFL debate got heated. That was huge. And, you know, Jason is still kind of reeling from the Mets losing the World Series. But, again, he's like a true fan, somebody out there, like a true fan, still optimistic and still confident in his team and his team going forward. So, that being said, we will see you next Monday. Make sure you read the Overtime Sports News Network. A lot of great articles from Justin, myself, Dustin, Arlenas, Bill from Long Island, everybody. We feel like the big Howard Stern family. I'm like, I'm in charge of the Whack Pack here, and anytime is our Whack Pack. Our Whack Pack is actually talented. So that's the difference. We'll see you next Monday. This has been Mediation Monday. See you then.
See you then.
Oh,